Gray. I'm with Live Tile. I'm the senior solution specialist there, so the technical guy. I've got Steve Marshall with Nucleus Cyber. We are partners. Live Tiles ourselves, we are the Mesa members, and we come to use this on a regular basis. Quick little piece about Live Tiles before I hand it off to Steve, who's really who you're here to see. We are an intelligent internet platform, so we have a number of modules that you can add to your Office 365 investment to extend the capabilities there. We have things like news, top-down, bottom-up news modules. We have a compliance module for things like documents you must read. So we have a way of tracking that. The other piece that we have is it's a module that helps with provisioning team sites and SharePoint sites. So you can think of the proliferation of those sites in the environment. We have a way of gathering metadata around that in a workflow, and then you can do something with the metadata. And that's really why Nucleus Cyber is here, is to explain how you can then protect the content within Teams and SharePoint to keep it from being released to the public, the vulnerability that might exist there. You know, most of the vulnerabilities are internal. A lot of them are unintentional. And Steve's going to go ahead and talk a little bit about that. Just a little bit more about Live Tiles. We're about a six-year-old company. Like I said, we're a software platform. Originally out of Australia, but now headquartered out of the university. So with that, I'll go ahead and hand it over to Steve.
Thank you very much. Okay. So, yeah, it's me and then lunch, but don't worry, I'm Scottish. So we'll get through this pretty quickly. So yeah, we're going to be talking about insider threats, and this is obviously an area of concern for lots of people, lots of different reasons. And the collaboration world that we live in, powered by cloud collaboration tools like Box, Dropbox, obviously all the things that Microsoft has made it even tougher for us to get an idea of who is sharing what, where is our sensitive information, how do we make sure people are using it in the right way. That employee handbook we all sign when we join our companies that says, this is how I will handle intellectual property, and you sign the book and then forget what that book says. What we'll be talking about here is how you can actually take those written policies and physically enforce them and monitor what's going on to make sure that people are doing what they should be doing. A little bit of a quick plug to start, because I was told I could say whatever I wanted in this session. There's actually an insider threat report that we were part of by a company called Cybersecurity Insiders, and it's gone out and surveyed a whole bunch of companies, and there's some very interesting stats in there. If you want a copy of that, you can shoot me an email, I can show you how to get a copy of it. There's a couple of the headlines there, but there's a couple of stats that I want to, in particular, delve into. And, you know, audience participation, you have to earn your lunch. So one of the questions we ask is, do we think insider threats have increased over the last 12 months? Have you seen more or less insider threats? Who says more? Who says less? Who doesn't know what an insider threat is? Okay, so we saw that more tended to be a thing. So this was quite not surprising. Insider threats, we're obviously talking about people inside the organization as opposed to external threats, people trying to hack in from outside. If you asked this question a few years ago, it's been interesting to watch the stats around people's concern between insider and external. People know it's all about the external. It's where all the money was going, protect the perimeter. Nowadays, how do you define the perimeter? It's much more difficult to define it, whilst it's still an area of investment. The insider threat is one that a lot more people are concerned of. Why? Well, because of these collaboration platforms. We then ask the question, or rather the organization asks the question, what type of insider threat are you concerned about? There's subcategories. There is this, the malicious person who's about to steal all your intellectual property and go off to a competitor. That's the malicious one. Is there the inadvertent or the negligent one? I know the employee handbook that, of course, I remember what it says when I sign it. It says I should do X, but in order to do my job, I'm going to bend the rules slightly and do Y. No harm, no foul. Okay? So you've got that negligent one. And then we've got the just complete accidental one. Hey, I got this file. I printed it out. I maybe forgot what I did of that printout. And then we know what happens with that. Okay. Apologies if I'm upsetting, if this is a little bit close to the bone for anyone in the room. It's just, I actually had a different slide, but this happened. I don't know if you saw in the abstract, we talked about the Doctor Who script that got sent to the wrong bit of BBC Worldwide, and then those leaked out, but I couldn't resist. So the accidental one is the one with, that people are really concerned about, and it is, a lot of it stems from these collaboration platforms. The other thing when it comes to insider threats, it's very difficult to determine the damage. Apparently preventing the damage for that last one was $85 on eBay to buy the script before it went out. You know, incredibly lucky. Imagine the damage had that gone wrong. I mean, it's just, can't even comprehend what that would be. And this is why there is such a concern, because how do we detect who is just getting on with their job versus someone doing something malicious versus someone bending the rules? And it's very difficult to see what's going on here. So we've got a couple of little steps that we like to talk about, approaches you should take. And then I have got a little bit of talk about the solution that we've actually just released yesterday. We launched this yesterday and can show how we can physically enforce some of these things. I'll just give a little bit of an introduction. If you're more interested, we can talk about that over lunch. So there's four steps that we talk about with customers to preventing these insider breaches. The first one that I always, you know, when we're talking about sensitive data, the first step that I always say to an organization is, what does sensitive data mean to you? And for many years, again, sensitive data was what I would call the standard sensitive data types. It's personally identifiable information, it's finance information, it's healthcare stuff in HR systems. It's things that have a defined, possibly, regulation around them. But then I always say to people, okay, that's the standard stuff, which we've known about. What is sensitive to your organization? What is it that you don't want someone else to get their hands on? Okay, is it a movie script? Is it some sort of proposal? Is it employee reviews that may not have content in it that would trigger a PII alert, but has information about individuals? What is that sensitive information for you? And then let's think about how we handle that. So that's the first kind of part, is identify what it is, and then find out where it is. Find out where all this information is. And the thing that we find almost every time without fail, the intellectual property, the stuff that is particular to your organization, is the stuff that is frankly out in the wild. That is the stuff that's in these collaboration platforms, because it doesn't necessarily have a defined template for it. And you know, we can go about our business of saying, well, it should only be in this system or this system or this system, but as we'll talk about in a second, we know that doesn't work. So identify where all it currently exists, and it's both at rest and in motion, because collaboration by its very nature, information and users, they're in motion, so we need to do it. The other part of it is, you know, we need to make sure that we not only know where that information is, we need to understand who's accessing it, who's doing what. We need to have an audit trail for various reasons. A lot of the time it's reactive. People want an audit trail for reactive reasons. We want to be able to prove this person did this on this date when we've had a breach. But what I want to encourage you to think about all through the session is, let's not just be reactive, let's think about proactive. So let's think about monitoring what's happening in these systems and have the system flexible enough to react to what's going on to prevent some of these happening. It's all very well having an audit for proving who did what, but it's much better to be proactive. Once we've identified where that is, and all that information is, let's make sure we're calling it out as sensitive. You know, when we've defined what that is, let's make sure that we're actually calling out what it is, so that we can then set up our business rules into the system to identify where we have all these different pieces of information moving around and being shared. And when you start to, I mean, you know, classification, user-based classification has been a pain in the neck for years. But the systems now are getting more and more sophisticated that we can start to tell them to look for particular keywords or other parts of information and automatically start to apply a tag. Tag's just, you know, a different word for a piece of metadata to those files. So then we can start to identify where those tags are and start doing things with it, such as, you know, preventing print, preventing someone emailing an attachment, preventing someone emailing an attachment to the wrong recipient, someone outside of your organization instead of internal within your organization. And this is particularly key when we do start to see the new collaboration tools like Microsoft Teams, when it's so easy for a user to spin up a Teams site and invite anyone they want. You know, your only option is to completely cut off guest users or allow guest users from the granularity of the box isn't there yet. And for most people, that's not flexible enough. You know, we need to have something in between. And so the other part of it is also recognizing, that's tied in with the next part, that this isn't just about internal. No one works in an office these days all the time. Everyone is moving. The data and the users are moving. So we have to be able to do this across all devices. And this is, again, where we saw this approach of a couple of years ago of starting to do all these different endpoint security on around data. You know, we're only going to allow certain files, certain devices to be used, etc. We have the whole bring your own device piece. Again, all of those approaches are starting at the wrong perimeter. They're starting at a device or an application. Whereas what we need to be thinking about is the data itself, because the data and the users that are interacting with it, they're constantly in motion. So we need to think about the changing what we call the risk profile. It's all very well someone opening this file when they are in an office, but if they're opening it in the airport, do we want them to have the same access and usage rights? Do we perhaps want to lock down that file and prevent them from printing it out, for example? How many times, if we did it now, how many times have you been in a hotel room, walk past the business center and you've seen someone's boarding pass printed out on the printer? Because someone's tried to print it out, shock, the printer hasn't worked, they've walked away and then 10 minutes later it's printed it out. Okay, imagine if that was some of your intellectual property that someone needed to print out before going into a meeting. Okay, it happens all the time. So that risk profile would have changed. So prevent that person from printing it out in the hotel. And the other part to this is, again, this is where a lot of the systems have failed before when they have tried to enforce you to use a particular device or download a piece of software and only be able to open your PowerPoint, your Word document, or whatever it is in a special application. Surprise, surprise, users don't like being forced to work in a way they're not used to. What do? We're a tech-savvy workforce nowadays. We go and find a different way to do it because we all have our own personal cloud devices and cloud capabilities, so people start doing it that way. You prevent me from sharing this with business partners, I'll just go share it through my personal Dropbox, my personal Box account, okay? That's what happens. So you need to get this balance right between doing it in a way that provides that level of security that you as an organization need, but in a way that's not going to frankly annoy the users and force them down the road of shadow IT. So they are the kind of the four steps that we embrace in conjunction with LiveTiles around the whole collaboration world. So specifically, I've mentioned Teams a couple of times, and you know, who here is using Microsoft Teams? Anyone? Beautiful. Okay. Those of you that aren't, who's concerned about the collaboration oversharing element to it? Losing control, a few nods of heads. You know, Microsoft Teams is interesting. It is, frankly, pretty revolutionary. In my company, okay, we're only a year old, we're a small company, I have almost eliminated the use of internal emails because of Teams. You know, we're using Teams to collaborate, and it's much better. I work with people in Australia, the East Coast, all over the globe, and we use Teams as opposed to email. Much better collaborative environment. So Microsoft just said the other week, it's 20 million people using it. It is great for users because you can just go in, add a new team, add these people, share a bunch of stuff. Now, it's very simple and easy to do it very powerful to do it, and it's not just sharing the stuff, you can then chat about it, all these different things. It is fantastic. The number one feature that Microsoft was asked for when they released Teams was, can you give us the ability to lock down within the team to only a subset of users? They want something called private chats, and the ability to private, make it a private channel within the team. Because the team's completely open to everyone in the group. And why? Because that ability, the freedom that the users got, was a nightmare for administrators. And a nightmare for the administrators because of what the business was asking them to do. The lack of tools to control and govern the content was pretty severe in that. So they're great for adoption, and you know, it's great for viral adoption, people are using Teams. It is a fantastic tool. But in the scenario where we're working with lots of people internally, externally, whole mixture of content going into these teams, we need to have some better controls for it. So this is where I go ever so slightly productive for just a couple of minutes. But we this week have introduced a new solution in conjunction with LiveTiles around governing and securing teams. And so what this allows you to do is now when you click to add the team, you can define a set of templates. You can say, I'm going to have this team that's going to have these particular different tabs within the team, and we're going to allow external users in this one, disallow external users in this one, and make sure that it's a much more controlled process. If you wanted to, you can put an approval process in place as well. So you could actually say, you know what, let's not let the entire organization automatically create a team. Let's lock it down a little bit more, and certain people have to go through an approval process to enable them to create that team. As part of that creation process, we capture metadata on the team itself. So again, this allows us to start to categorize and understand the nature of the teams that are being created. And one of the other things about teams, when people are creating tens of thousands of them, I think Microsoft has a couple of hundred thousand teams already, teams are created, and then a lot of them just die eventually because they're often created for a small purpose or there's duplicates created. This ability to create metadata helps us keep on top of this. We can actually create it with an end date, for example. So you can start to think about a review process. You can put an end date in it. Once it reaches that end date, send the owners a notification. Is this team still active? Is it not active? If it's not active, not needed anymore, let's clear it out. Microsoft does give you a lot of storage, but eventually you do start paying for it. Plus, who knows what content is in there that eventually you might not want to let it get out. So that ability to put a little bit of life cycle into it, so automatically have timely reviews and build it into the task set. So we can start to look at these inactive teams. And you know, just having a little bit from the admin standpoint, a little bit more of an overall view. So have a governance dashboard, see all the different teams, see the metadata that's there, begin to start to search on different pieces of metadata associated with that team. And all of that metadata is customizable. So you could put whatever is, remember that, what is sensitive information for you, what are the things, keywords, etc., that might dictate sensitive information, project names, etc. You can put that as metadata. So we can start to very quickly and easily search out all these different pieces. So that's the teams, the governance piece itself. You know, create teams in a more governed way as opposed to that crazy sprawl we've got. What about protecting the content itself? So as part of that process of creating the team, we can actually put some information protection or controlling rules directly into that team. So if you've called it internal only, we can enforce rules that says, you know what, no guest users can see or access any content in it. We could say if it has this particular keyword in that team, automatically block the chat. This isn't just the files, this is also the chat. Only show certain people with maybe this user group attribute or if they're part of the HR group or whatever it is. Only allow them to see a piece of information if it contains PII, for example. So we can really start to get very granular within the team of what we can control. But it's not just doing it from an admin point of view, because that doesn't work. You can set a bunch of rules for your entire organization. The fact is, people like that ability to work in certain ways themselves, and they know the content better. They know what's in those files a little bit better. So within this, you can actually empower the team's owners to start to build some enforcement rules and say, you know what? All these files, I really want to make sure certain people only have read-only access to it. So we can allow those team owners to actually build those rules into it, build those protection rules in. And we can base it on any piece of metadata around the file, the user, etc. So that's an hardware I said someone is part of a different group. You can give them a different experience. If they're a part of the HR group, allow them full control regardless of where they are. If they're not part of the HR group, let them see the files in the office. If they're external, in a coffee shop, airport, make sure it's encrypted, make sure they can't copy, paste, make sure they can't send out to someone. And it's also for chat, as I mentioned. I mentioned encryption there as part of this. This is one of the, a fairly new feature we put in there that it has quite a lot of popularity. So this is, we weren't intending to be talking about watermarks, certainly not in the case of the watermarks of the previous session. But when it comes to files, we can actually do some fairly unique things with the watermark. Any piece of metadata, that team's metadata, the file metadata, the user metadata, we can put that as what we call a dynamic watermark into the file. So as I open the file, this example, I don't know if you'll be able to see it, but I have Megan Bowen. Megan opened the file, Megan's name goes in as a watermark to that file. So quite often one of the things we are asked about is, okay, you can prevent someone copying, pasting, forwarding, etc. What happens if someone was to take out their phone and take a picture of it and send it that way? You'd have to be pretty dumb to send something with your name splashed all over it. You know, that would be a pretty, you know, called a career-limiting move, I think, to do something like that. So we can actually, the level of protection that we can do around the files in collaboration platforms, this was Teams, but this of course applies to SharePoint, Dropbox, those of you who are still stuck on file shares, all of this can be done in file shares as well, which means that employee handbook, the written policies that you've got, you can now technically enforce these things and do it in a way that's frankly not going to annoy your users so that they're going to go off and start sharing things in their other platforms that they've got. So that was just a very brief overview of what we do, some of the things that we've seen. If you want to talk in more depth, we're next door, we can actually show you this thing working live and we can start manipulating metadata for you and adding stuff in if you want to see how it actually works live. Any questions?
Does your project only work with Microsoft Teams? Or?
No, so it works. The Teams one we just released yesterday, this integration with Teams, which includes the governance part. We support SharePoint on-premises, SharePoint online, file shares, Dropbox, boxes coming. We keep going back and forth with Google Docs because Google Docs aren't really files, they're web pages, so there's a little bit of a different thing to it. But it's basically, because we're doing the files itself, in some ways it doesn't matter what the system is, because we're doing it at a file level. If it's an Office file, if it's image files, if it's Adobe files, we can do all this level of protection to them. It's just a case of us building a little bit of a connector to speak to the system. Any other questions? No? Okay. Well, thank you very much. As I say, there you go. Finished on time for lunch. There's flyers at the back there that give you a little bit of information on this and the other parts of the Live Tiles portfolio. So please go and see my lovely looking assistants in the back of the room there and help yourself.